There are always sermons that I probably should have preached, but I'm not going to preach today. As Congress debates the tax code, you should send them verse 53 of Mary's song. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. So far, as I'm getting older, everything except my personality flaws are working well for the most part. This past summer, in the fall, was my 45th anniversary of graduating from Rossville High School, the home of the Hornets. High school reunions are amazing. They're organized by the people who, by and large, were at the top of their game in high school. We elected them to be class officers all those years ago because they were popular then. I find it cruelly interesting to see how sagging are both many of their popularities and their bodies. But they are quick to point out to me that I once had hair, and nobody thought I would be the one to grow up to be the preacher minister type. What happened to you? They asked. Many of my classmates, with all seriousness, say without sarcasm, but with deep longing, "Oh, I wish we could go back and live those good old days." Those are the only people who did not have pimples in high school that say things like that. They were successful in high school, I believe, to some degree, because the rest of us were slow starters, and we offered them no competition whatsoever. So at the reunion this last summer, I started asking everyone who dared utter that statement about life in high school being the time that they would like to go back. I had a question, and I asked it simply and with sincerity without letting on what the right answer should be. I had to be quite a showman. Interestingly, no one there has ever read one of my sermons online. There were only 52 of us in our graduating class, and we were friends and companions for the first 18 years of our life. There's a trusting intimacy there that I took full advantage of. Those folks who wish to be restored to 1972 life in small town America, I would sort of cozy up to them and quietly, with a positive tone to my voice, ask, "You voted for Donald Trump, didn't you? Let's restore America. Let's make America great again." It was the unofficial theme of my high school reunion. God bless America and let everyone else in the world suffer. I lost at least half of my remaining hair that night. And I realized why one needs to drink alcohol at a reunion. But I couldn't because I was my own designated driver. 3/4 of my class are restorationist. A fabled time in the past when all was good, or at least better than the challenges of the present, is a very common theme for many people. So many of my classmates already seem not to be able to remember what life was like back then. In my high school days, we were in the midst of the Vietnam War that killed over 1 million Vietnamese. Of course, we weren't paying attention to that, but we did pay attention to the reality that 56,000 of our own soldiers died and left us wondering as young men how to avoid going to war ourselves. We were worrying deeply about nuclear war as Russia installed missiles down in Cuba. We had a president assassinated. The civil rights movement that saw nearly every major city on fire, thousands killed, along with two more assassinations that included Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. Hey, those were the days. I am nearly always humbled with the present reality that these days, 2017, are the good old days that our children will remember as such. And that's scary. When reading the scriptures like we did this morning with the reading from the prophet Isaiah, we need to always remember that those scriptures were most often written by members of my high school class, the Restorationist. The Jewish scriptures most often long for those magical years when David was king, watching women bathe on the neighboring rooftop and then killing Bathsheba's husband so he could officially have her. And Solomon, David's son, the next king, he had 1,000 wives. Those were the days. Those were the days were really two short periods of time when Israel was at the top of its game. Temple worship was established, and no political rivals stood a chance of toppling the tiny little kingdom. In the 3,000 years of Israel's existence, the days of David and Solomon were a tiny 100 years of it. The longing for a Jewish savior, however, and the return to the prominence of a true Jewish nation has helped maintain Jewish identity for a very long time. This restoration theme, I think, is one of the biggest sins of our collected biblical works. The suggestion that there was a time when God's people had it all right and all was good is a fable, every bit as deficient in reality as that other fable that we call the Garden of Eden. There never was a perfect time, a utopian existence, and if we pay attention to the story of the Garden of Eden, there was a sincere struggle for Adam and Eve, even when they were in the midst of the garden. It was a rough time, I think, for them. We had a meeting last week of a group here at First United that is called MERC, the Member Relations Committee. It's charged with a purpose of energizing us and luring us forward to be a community, a faith group for each other and the community at large. Most of us who have been in church for the majority of our lives, we have to be careful not to fall into the restoration dilemma. What the church used to be cannot ever be again and should not be returned to. But that does not mean that we cannot envision a future for ourselves that is faithful for what God is luring us to become. Now, I now live on South Rogers Street. Every day, I pass the old McDowell Baptist Church, which is just, south of First and Rogers. First United Church, this church, helped fund and build the McDowell Baptist Church. It was supposed to be us on the city's west and south side. It closed down for good about, 3-4 years ago. It's now becoming a rock climbing rec center. Seeing that church be rebuilt as something else is reminiscent of my many journeys through Western Europe, in England and Scotland and Wales and France and Germany, Spain, where most churches are now empty. Their warehouse space, their gift shops, their Indian tandoori restaurants. I suspect that Indiana University would be glad to have our building. They could take down the cross, take the words off the wall. This would be a great concert hall. Folks, we need to decide if we want to be the future use of this building, or if there is a successful market for progressive, open-minded, faith community of people who seek to be and to model what it means to be followers of the way of Jesus. Christianity. It's rather embarrassing to be thought of as a Christian these days, isn't it, for us? Most people do not differentiate between the different kinds of Christians. We're just a shrinking, monolithic group who all believe the same things to most people. And around the world, it's no better. We're no better. Muslims do not know Christian groups any more than most of us can identify the differences between Sunni, Shia, and Sufi Muslims. Do we want to be the type of community that Isaiah and then Jesus sought to give voice to? Because surely if we want to be a Christian faith community that flourishes, We've got to align ourselves with the one that we call our Christ. On this Advent Sunday of joy, we proclaim that despite appearances to the contrary, good news is coming. After death comes resurrection. After destruction comes rebuilding. After war comes peace. The world is being transformed, if we're paying attention, by God's impossible possibilities. God's way is emerging in a troubled world. God's Spirit is upon all people, and the vulnerable, outcast, and the lost will experience healing and hospitality, while those in high places will recognize the error of their ways. Such are the words of the prophet Isaiah, and is our Advent hope. I wonder, does God's justice mean letting people get off scot-free? Or must certain sacrifices, punishments, if you will, be enforced against the will of others to achieve God's goals? Will there be a day of reckoning for those whose decisions privilege power over justice, wealth over communal well-being? Transformation, new community, may mean the death of one way of doing church and the birth of a new way. Death of the familiar, including familiar practices of injustice built into the social order, may be painful. The birth pangs of accompanying the birth of a new age may also be painful. This is the message, I think, that we had read from Mary's song from the Gospel according to Luke. The social order will be turned upside down so that it can finally be right side up. It's not that it ever was, but it is our job to do it today. We see the quest for justice in the hashtag MeToo movement. The powerful are falling. It remains to be seen whether the harassed and the vulnerable will be exalted. There's a lot of victim blaming going on out there. Balancing the scales of justice may be painful, especially to those who have benefited from power politics, economic privilege, institutional injustice. They must sacrifice, I think, so that the tears of the vulnerable will be dried and healing can occur. At the very least, Isaiah and Mary's words remind us that justice seeking can be messy and involve pain for some to uplift others. Perhaps Reinhold Niebuhr's insight that implicit violence is always present in the quest for social transformation is helpful in our own quest for social change. Can we love those who we perceive to be the perpetrators of injustice, while at the same time let justice take its course? Can we forgive, yet require sacrifice of those who have harmed the powerless and the innocent? In all the seasons of life, especially in seasons of struggle, as we seek to revitalize our personal and community lives, we are intended, friends, to be Spirit-centered and animated by God's Spirit. God's Spirit moves freely and is unrestrained by religion, seeking justice and healing, always. Still, as 1 Thessalonians asserts, we can sail with the winds of the Spirit by practices of prayer, gratitude, and joy. Indeed, these spiritual practices, I think, enable us to persist in the midst of all the ugly that is happening in our world. We are called this morning to risk everything like John the Baptist risked. And that includes the risk that the community that we are seeking to make and create to do God's will may reveal that God's will, it may reveal that God's will is not identical to our own. Maybe God's got his own, or God's got her own ideas. that God's aspirations for the world may not be the same as ours. I think being God's people, forming God's community, is not safe. It's not comfortable. And it's better than comfortable. Because if we're willing in this Advent season to offer, if you will, our very dreams to God, and to trust that God's dreams will do better, they will fulfill our own. We might discover for ourselves that our God is able to accomplish abundantly far more than we even know to ask or imagine. Don't get me wrong. Don't stop dreaming. We need to dream the most audacious dreams that we can as we continue to try to envision what this community can and ought to be. But then let us offer our dreams, all the things that we think church should be, all the things we think community ought to be. Let us offer our dreams to God, whose creativity and love surpasses the best of our own. Let's be ready this Advent for more than what we expect if we decide that we want this community to flourish. Let us be the people who do not seek restoration, but thriving in new and exciting ventures. Amen.